portion is not actually from the New Testament, as you might imagine as you look at Psalm 13. A little typo there. Just making sure you're awake. You noticed that. I'm sure you all caught that already. Psalm 13, in fact, it's a psalm we used last week as our call to worship. But today, we use it as the center for our message and our learning today. Hear these words from the psalmist. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts? And day after day have sorrow in my heart. How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord, my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation, and I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. This is the word of the Lord. Well, to help us get into Psalm 13, I wanted to read a different piece this morning. It's a little book that's been around for a long time called Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Perhaps you're familiar with it. Anybody read this one? A few of you? I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I will give you a little sample so you get the gist of Alexander's day and see what this sounds like to you. I went to sleep with gum in my mouth. Now there's gum in my hair. When I got out of bed this morning, I tripped on the skateboard. By mistake, I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was running. I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At breakfast, Anthony found a Corvette Stingray car kit in his breakfast cereal. And Nick found a junior undercover agent code ring in his breakfast cereal box. But in my breakfast cereal box, all I found was breakfast cereal. I think I'll move to Australia. In the carpool, Mrs. Gibson let Becky have a seat by the window. Audrey and Elliot got seats by the window too. And I said I was being scrunched. I said I was being smushed. I said if I don't get a seat by the window, I'm going to be carsick. No one even answered. I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At school, Mrs. Dickens liked Paul's picture of the sailboat better than my picture of the invisible castle. Singing time, she said I sang too loud. At counting time, she said I left out 16. Who needs 16 anyway? I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And we'll skip ahead through some more of Alexander's day on to the evening. There were lima beans for dinner, and I hate limas. There was kissing on TV. I hate kissing. My bath was too hot. I got soap in my eyes. My marble went down the drain, and I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. I hate my railroad train pajamas. When I went to bed, Nick took back the pillow he said I could keep, and the Mickey Mouse nightlight burned out, and I bit my tongue. The cat wants to sleep with Anthony, not with me. It has been a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And my mom says, some days are like that. I appreciate that book. It's one of the few children's books that doesn't have resolution. It doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't give a cliched answer or a happy ending. It just shares. Some days are like that. Some days are terrible, horrible, no good, very bad days. Anybody have one of those days? Yeah, right? And I appreciate that somebody wrote that so that kids would know they're not alone when there's awful days like that. I thought of that book as I was reading Psalm 13 because the Psalms to me are the precursor to books like that. The Psalms are these honest appraisals of life. Some are joy-filled and celebratory. Some say, "Woo, God, you're awesome, and life is good." And those are the ones we tend to focus on and to bring up in worship and make songs from. But there are also Psalms that are honest about the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad days too. Psalm 13 is certainly one of those. And if you were with us a few weeks ago, you may remember we talked about different ways, different Psalms, and the experiences that they relate to. Walter Brueggemann, an Old Testament professor, he categorized the Psalms in sort of three experiences. He talked about there are Psalms of orientation, Psalms that help us to just orient our lives and connect to who God is, the character of God, the nature of God. And so we learned a word that a few weeks ago. Do you remember that Hebrew word, anybody? Anybody? Started with an H. You can put it up there. It sounded like, right? Chesed, remember that? If you were here, I know you weren't all here necessarily, but Chesed, it's this great Hebrew word that means so much. It means steadfast faithfulness and loving kindness and so much more. And it's throughout so many Psalms. We heard it in some phrases today in our prayer of confession that comes out of the Psalms. Again, just we get oriented around the character of God and nature of God. But Brueggemann also notes that there are about a third of the Psalms that are Psalms of disorientation. Disorientation. Psalms that speak to the moments in life when nothing is right. Where the phrases like our Psalm 13 begin, "How long, Lord?" And other phrases come up like, "Where are you? Why me?" These are the phrases of disorientation. And I love that there are a third of the Psalms that speak to those moments in life, because we all experience them, don't we? We, like Alexander, have those sort of bad days. And of course, they can be more than just a day. It could be a week, a month, a year. They can go on. One pastor said it like this. He says, "It's in seasons of orientation that life just doesn't make sense. That things have fallen apart at work or at home, or we're in a relationship, and we are left in a thick fog full of questions and doubts." Perhaps you've been into that kind of a season before. Perhaps for some of us, that's the season we live in right now. So we look to the Psalms, and I'm so thankful that the Psalms aren't all full of joy, but instead present us also with these moments, the moments of the fog. The mystics spoke about it as a dark night of the soul. And I'm grateful that the Psalms are here, the Psalms of disorientation exist. And they teach us something about how we live in the midst of disorientation as people of faith. And so I want to explore a little bit of that in Psalm 13 today. First part I want to say is the Psalms of disorientation, Psalm 13 and so many others, I think they let us know that grief and loss, they're a part of our condition. But more than that, that we are no less faithful when we acknowledge it, when we express it, we share that, when we're honest about it. Pastor Jill, you talked about when we're angry and we're sad with the kids, and said, you know, people don't like to be around us when we're so sad and when we're angry. And it's true. We're uncomfortable with each other in the midst of those disorienting moments. And so often then we hide them. And we hold them back. And we put on the mask. And we do it at work. We do it at home. We do it at church. How are you? I'm fine. Right? When in the midst, perhaps inside of us, we're not fine. We could be going through all manner of disorienting life moments, but we're not sure it's okay to share those, to confess those, to bring them out, to share, to say anything about them, and we're certainly not sure it's okay to say that to God. Because maybe if we're angry about something in our life, maybe if we're confused and sad about it and we share that with God, does God care? Is God listening? The Psalms of disorientation show us, indeed, God listens. And that condition is true for every one of us. And we don't have to hide it. We don't have to fake it. I read a story a while back of a Christian college. It was days after 9/11. And like many Christian colleges, there was weekly chapel services that were planned and that you students attended. Mind you, this is 3 days after 9/11. And so many went to chapel hoping that the service would acknowledge this amazingly powerful, disorienting moment that we all went through. But for whatever reason, the chaplain, the college, decided, no, we're just going to go through what we had planned. And so they had a chorus of several upbeat, positive praise tunes, and nothing was said of the tragedy and the loss, the chaos. And people began to leave because the disorientation was so big, and yet nobody was speaking to it. Maybe they thought, if we speak to it, is this somehow an affront to God? The Psalms of disorientation are never afraid of that. The poets write and they rail and they say, how long, Lord? Brueggemann himself says this about these kind of psalms. He says, the Psalms of disorientation lift up and call attention to the reality of human loss and pain. Without making moral judgments about whose fault it is, it's simply a given of human life. It needs to be processed theologically. And these psalms are models for ways in which the church learns to have faith in the midst of disorientation and pain and loss, learns to worship and pray in the midst of pain and loss. And so I'm grateful that those psalms exist and that we get to look into them and say, oh, well, that's honest. Yeah, oh, that's exactly what I'm going through. They get me and I get it. Because sometimes in those seasons of disorientation, sometimes in those terrible, horrible, no good, very bad days, we find it hard to speak the situation, hard to pray, hard to utter anything, and that's when we can turn to those psalms and let them speak for us. Something else I think the poems of disorientation tell us is that God can handle it. God can handle our complaints, as Jill mentioned. God wants to hear it. And I know sometimes that scares us a little bit. We're not sure if that's okay. I remember years ago there was a TV series, The West Wing. Anybody watch that one? Back in the day, it was just one of our favorite shows. We were watching it. It was a powerful scene. In the midst of the series, the president's personal secretary has died in a tragic car accident. And they have a service, a memorial, and then everybody's gone. And then afterwards, the president, faithful man of faith, he rails at God, calls God an SOB and so much more. We showed that clip at my former church at one point. And I have to say, there were so many people who were angered by it. You can't talk to God like that, they said. It's all through the Psalms. What do you mean? People have been talking to God like that for centuries. God can handle it. God can handle our anger and our frustration and our doubts and our questions. Even Jesus railed on the cross. Do you remember Matthew records it? It's that phrase, why have you forsaken me? Straight out of the Psalms of Disorientation. It's the beginning of Psalm 22. Scholars, many of them think it may have been Jesus reciting the whole psalm as he hung on the cross. Was that the truth, that God forsaken Jesus, that he abandoned Jesus, his own son? I don't think so. But it was certainly the emotion Jesus was experiencing on the cross, and he shared it. He expressed it. It was honest and real, and God can handle it. But the one other thing we learn as we look in the Psalms of Disorientation, though, is that people of faith, they might rail. They might ask of God so many things, but ultimately the Psalms of Disorientation always turn. They turn at the end to trust. Trust even in the midst of the unknown, trust in the midst of the fog and the darkness, trust in the midst of the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad days. There's a pattern to them all. Really quickly, the first few verses go through, and what is it? It's the how longs, Lord. The rage. How long, Lord? Why have you forsaken me, Lord? They always begin with these questions, and then they move to the request. It says, are you going to answer, Lord? This is what I need. Look on me, answer me, give light, do something. This is the pattern. And then ultimately they turn. They turn to relinquishment. The final parts to say, oh, but I trust. I trust. Now, we can read the psalm and it's all right there in one moment, but I imagine for the writer, each of these phrases may have taken days or weeks or months to come to. Particularly the last turn, but I trust. That may have taken decades. Mother Teresa was sanctified last year, a saint in the Catholic Church now. Interestingly enough, they found after her death her journals and discovered that Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who cared for and walked along the dying for decades. She experienced a dark night of the soul that lasted more than 50 years. Her journals are ripe with these questions and doubts and frustrations at the silence of God. And yet there was always this element of trust as she continued on to serve and to care for the least of those around her, because she knew God was in that and there would be an answer there. But in the midst of her darkness, there was trust, relinquishment. This morning, I don't know where we are, if some of us are in this kind of a season of disorientation or not, but I want to hold up to you the Psalms. A third of them speak to those seasons. And I would encourage you, if you're in that season right now, or know somebody who is, to dive in and to find those Psalms, Psalms 13, 22, 32, 35, 50, they're all throughout. To read them and to live into them and to let them speak for you and to you and to know you're not alone. And perhaps even to rewrite them into your own voice with your own concerns, your own questions, and to know that God can handle it and to trust that God responds. Gracious God, seasons of disorientation, we go through them. They are tragic and painful. We grope, we grasp, we rage, and we grieve. Lord, help us to read into the Psalms once more to find truth there. Truth of those who have experienced the seasons before us. The truth that you hear and respond, that you know our pain, and that you are with us in it. Oh Lord, may your presence be felt powerfully as we go through our own terrible, horrible, no good, very bad days and seasons, we ask. In Jesus' name. Friends, we continue to worship. We share of our